Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Horror Versus Reality. I'm Anna. That's Morgan. Let's do this.
Hey, I'm That's Morgan.
Well, Morgan, you told me to switch it up, so I'm switching it up, lady.
You totally switched it up.
I did. Aren't you proud?
So much drama.
Yeah. Guys, it's been a while since we did an episode that wasn't a murder. You might even be thinking, you've done an episode that wasn't a murder? Yeah, the lighthouse wasn't a murder. It was an accidental death that wasn't reported properly. Which it was kind of hard to, but anyway. That's the last time we did an episode that wasn't a murder. So, but this is still icky, unfortunately. It's not like an exciting heist that really happened. Which would never be in the horror or thriller realm, so that's never going to happen. Sorry, not sorry. But yeah, today's episode is 2006's Notes on a Scandal versus Mary Kay Letourneau. And if you don't know who Mary Kay Letourneau is, boy, are you about to learn. But first, Notes on a Scandal, which I saw in theaters back in the day. That was when I was going to see movies all the time because one of my friends worked at the theater and got everyone in for free a lot. And I saw, like, every Oscar buzz movie that came out for, like, 3 years in a row. Which this was a very Oscar buzzy film. It was nominated for, and I don't think it was nominated for Best Picture, but it was nominated for a bunch of things. And most notably, Kate Blanchett and Judi Dench were nominated for Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress and Best Actor. So, yeah. This film had a lot of prestige at the time. I guess it kind of still does. But, you know, it's a cast of a lot of people that you'll know their names. This isn't a lot of unknowns, really. So, yeah. It's a bona fide Hollywood film. Morgan?
Yeah.
Thoughts on the film?
It was very well-made movie. I just am not a fan of the subject matter and the pace. The pace just killed me. There were, like, moments when you're like, oh, there's a thrilling part. And then you're like, oh, back to droning on. Like, I don't know. I thought the pace was weird. Subject matter, very disturbing. And the pace just was all over the place.
I think the pace is fine. I think it beats along at a pretty, I don't know, a pretty good pace. It gets right into the heart of the drama pretty quickly. You don't pitter around before the incident much. But I respect your opinion.
It's just like how it turns into a thrilling part, and you're just like, oh, what's happening? And then it just stops. And you're like, oh, okay. And then it goes back to a thrill, and then it just stops. Like, the resolution of the film comes way too late, I think.
Maybe.
That's my opinion.
It's only, like, what, like, an hour and a half?
Yeah, it still felt too long for me. But maybe I just did not like the movie.
I think you can't get past the subject matter. Because it's, like, immaculately well-acted. And you did say it was well-filmed and it's, like, well-made. It is. But I can get how it would be hard. It's like Boys Don't Cry is a phenomenal movie. Very hard to watch.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I do. Okay, so, although this is not as brutal, because, just like in the real case, it's complicated because, yes, the child is less so in this film and far more so in reality, the grooming.
Yeah.
Because the real case, it takes place over a much longer time. And this is only like over the course of a few months, an in and out 20-minute adventure affair, you know?
Yeah.
Quote Rick and Morty. Sorry. I gotta make light of this as I can, because it's, you know, it's a bizarre case. It's a touchy subject. The film's heavy. And there's other elements to the film that are creepy besides the affair between a teacher and student.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into. The real terror of the movie is actually Judi Dench. Judi Dench is fucking terrifying in this movie.
Yeah, she is.
Like, she is chilling.
She's this sad, crazy cat lady.
Yeah, oh my god. Can I just say that the cat scenes, I just fast-forwarded through because it was too heartbreaking for me.
I know! I was like, oh my god, I stopped the movie and, like, looked through pictures of Lotus.
Oh no, Morgan!
I know, it was too early to watch a movie where a cat dies.
That's true, like, that was a little too soon for you. And, and honestly, when I realized that this was loosely based, or loosely really just inspired by the Mary Kay Letourneau case, I had completely forgotten the cat in the movie. Because I think I blacked it out, honestly.
It's so sad.
I know!
And the cat just throws up and just like, oh, he's so sick, so sick. And I'm like, oh my god, it's Lotus!
No! Does the cat die? Yes. Of yes. illness, not of ill repute. Just so you know, nobody...
Yeah, she doesn't murder the cat.
Yeah, the cat is not murdered. No cats were harmed in the making of this film.
She puts the cat...
Yeah, the cat it has a fatal illness, like, I don't know, feline leukemia or something. They don't actually say what's wrong with the cat.
Yeah, no. And the cat looks perfectly healthy, but I'm glad they didn't use, like, a real sick cat.
Oh my god, that would kill me. That would be, like, the Sarah McLachlan PETA commercial. Not PETA, but, SPCA. SPCA commercials.
God, yeah.
You just see the
one... arms of the angel.
Yeah, you just see the one-eyed dog that's staring at you with the one puppy dog eye. Just like...
Yeah, it's like, what did you do?
Yeah.
And then the cat's like, the cat.
Yeah, it's bad. That's tearing at your heartstrings. It's not fair, SPCA. I don't want to see it. All right. But let's get into things. So, the director of this is Sir Richard Charles Hastings Eyre, CHCBE. Yeah, he's got a lot of titles. You know, respected British men do. There's plenty of respected British men that don't, but you know what I'm saying. Looking at you, Idris Elba. Yeah, I have the hots for you, Giselle. It's no secret.
Me too. I mean, who doesn't? Come on.
True, right? I mean, he could turn a straight man gay, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't actually mean that. I don't make light of that. Anyway. Okay, so he's an English film, theater, and television, and opera director. He's known for directing films like Iris and Stage Beauty. I own a copy of Stage Beauty. I bought it, one of those like 4 for $20 at Blockbuster when they still existed. It's the film where Claire Danes and Billy Crudup started their affair. If you didn't know that they had an affair, they did before she married her current husband. And she like stole him from, I think, whoever he was married to at the time. There's some fun mid-2000s gossip for you.
Ooh, hot goss.
Yeah, but the movie is about like how men played all the roles and on the stage back then, in like Shakespeare's era, and Claire Danes becomes one of the first female actresses or actors. So she, you know, stood up for herself and was like, "I'm a woman. I should be playing female roles. I think it's dumb that we just put men in wigs and dresses when I'm right here."
Yes.
So that's basically what Stage Beauty is about. Anyway, that's a movie that he directed. On the stage, the actual stage, his film credits, or his stage credits rather, include directing Daniel Day-Lewis in Hamlet and Sir Ian McClellan in Richard III. As I mentioned, he also directs opera, and he worked on the revival of Carmen and The Marriage of Figaro. So this guy has like quite the pedigree. And he is also a frequent collaborator with Dame Judi Dench. She's starred in several of his projects. So, obviously, we're going to go straight into Dame Judi Dench.
Nice.
As Barbara Covett. Dench is considered to be one of the most accomplished living English actors to date. She has a career spanning over 6 decades. She has earned an Academy Award, a Tony, 2 Golden Globes, 4 British Academy of Television Awards, 6 BAFTAs, and 7 Olivier Awards. Some of her notable film roles include Eleanor Lavish in A Room with a View, M in 8 consecutive James Bond films, starting with GoldenEye and ending with Spectre, Hecuba in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, Armand Voisin in Chocolat, Iris Murdoch in Iris, Catherine de Bourgh in Pride and Prejudice, Annie Hoover in J. Edgar, and Philomena Lee in Philomena, amongst many, many others. The woman's been in lots and lots of things. She's a fucking legend, to be frank.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to get into Cate Blanchett as Sheba Hart. Blanchett is an Australian actress considered to be one of the greatest of her generation. Her versatile career has garnered her 2 Oscars, 3 BAFTAs, 3 Screen Actors Guild Awards, and 3 Golden Globes. She's known for roles such as Galadriel in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Elizabeth I in Elizabeth the Golden Age, Bob Dylan in I'm Not There, which, by the way, her transformation into Bob Dylan is stunning.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she was better than all the men in the movie.
I know, I definitely think the same. I think she's better than the men.
100%. She plays Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator and Jasmine in Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine, which won her an Oscar. So yeah, she's also a fucking legend, honestly. She's incredible. And just, yeah, she's wonderful. I love her. She's one of my favorite actresses, hands down. Bill Nighy, as Richard Hart. Nighy is an English actor well known for roles in popular films such as Love Actually, in which he played Bill Mack, Davy Jones in the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, and my favorite, Sean's stepfather Philip in Shaun of the Dead, amongst many, many other roles.
I like when he played Slotty Botfast.
Yeah. he's been in tons of stuff. He's a very recognizable actor. Okay, so Philip Davis as Brian Bangs, and I'll tell you about him in the film. He has a really small, it's a pivotal role, but it's a small role. But Davis is known as he's an English actor, writer, director, known best for his leading roles in the UK TV dramas Whitechapel and Silk. He's also well known for playing the antagonist in the premiere episode of the BBC Sherlock show that starred Benedict Cumberbatch. The episode was called A Study in Pink, and that's a legendary TV role at this point, like really good episode of television. On the horror and cult side of things, Davis has film roles in the rock operas Quadrophrenia, and Pink Floyd's The Wall. He was in both of those films, and he also played Kevin in Alien 3. Come on, I'm not going to mention an alien movie.
Best for last.
Exactly. Juno Temple is Polly Hart. Temple, a British actress, has been acting since she was a child. She's the daughter of film director Julian Temple. Juno rose to fame with roles in Atonement, Notes on a Scandal, and The Dark Knight Rises. Currently, she can be seen playing Keeley Jones on Ted Lasso, a role that has earned her 2 Primetime Emmy nominations and 3 Golden Globe nominations. Go Juno. I love her, actually.
Yeah. She's in, what was it? Year One.
Was she?
Yeah, she's the chick he's trying to marry when they're, like, the cavemen. And he's like, hit her in the head. And he's like, are you sure? Will that get her to like me? And he's like, yeah, just hit her over the head. And he hits her in the head.
Oh my god.
She's like walking around with a really massive head injury.
Oh boy. Am I aware of Year One? Yes. Have I seen Year One? No.
What? Aw. It's goofy. I like it.
It always looked goofy, but like too goofy for me to actually watch. And I just haven't been like fucked up enough in the right moment to watch it, I guess.
Smoke some weed and watch it, and you will laugh. There's a lot of comedians in it.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's Jack Black. Come on.
That's fair. I mean, I watched Your Highness, like, a few months ago. It can't be...
It's not that bad.
And I laughed at Your Highness, so all right. That's fine. Fine. Okay, so let's see. Where are we? Oh, Andrew Simpson as Stephen Connolly. Simpson is best known for his role in this film, but he has continued to take roles kind of sparingly over the years. He is said to work as a hotel manager primarily now, as of 2016. So, yeah. We'll get into... I'm not going to discuss every little, like, side actor, because, like, some of them... I don't know. These seem to be the highlights, the most important characters, in my opinion. So I'm just going to go to the summary. All right. So the film centers around Barbara Covett, who is played by Judi Dench, and she is a history teacher at a comprehensive school in London. She's never married. She is really close to retirement, and she's just a bitter old bitch.
Yeah.
She, like, literally hates all her students and her fellow teachers. She, like, is really phoning it in. You see this scene early on where she's, like, at a teacher meeting, like, before the year, and their homework over the year was to say, like, what could be improved in their department. And she's, like, she hands him a one-page laminated sheet of paper that's basically just, like, I don't think we should change anything. We're performing above standards, or above minimum standards, but not, like, top of the class or anything. We're fine. I don't think we should change anything. Move on.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, yeah. She, like, doesn't care anymore. She, like, hates life pretty much. She's just a bitter old woman. And, The only comfort that she has is she keeps a diary and has clearly kept a diary for a really long time. So it just shows her, like, crazy inner life, which is a little bit delusional. Because you'll see she's not a perfect narrator. She's a little bit unreliable at times. So she sees the new art teacher, which is Sheba Hart, played by Kate Blanchett. She's just spent 10 years, like, taking care of her special needs child and is just getting back into the workforce. So she doesn't have her legs as a teacher. She's very nervous, and the kids can sense that. So Barbara is very, like, hip to hone in on her immediately. I think she sees a weakness in her, but she also... immediately notices that she's this, like, ethereal goddess. And she's, like, also, like, envious of her. It's a weird... She has weird feelings towards her, initially, yeah. Barbara does.
She calls her, like, a fae creature?
Yeah, she does.
I was like, wow, is that, like, throwing it back to Lord of the Rings, or...
Yeah, I wasn't sure what she meant by that, necessarily. And then she also makes fun of her, like, clothing, saying that she's, like, slumming it in her shabby coat and it's disingenuous. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, what do you know of her life? You don't know this.
Yeah, she's like, she wears this coat to pretend to be like, hey, I'm like you.
Yeah, it's like, okay, lady, you're very judgmental.
Yeah.
Extremely judgmental. But needless to say... they end up striking up a friendship. At one point, she intervenes because these two kids in Sheba's class are fucking going at it. They're just fighting, and she sees that Sheba has no handle on the situation. And she intervenes and breaks up the boys who, you know, understandably are terrified of this woman.
Yeah.
She's, like, the most hated teacher in the school and is known for being, you know, a strict bitch, for lack of a better word there. And so, you know, they break it up, and they are cheeky to her, like, they're lying about what's happening, essentially. But she gets it out of them. And basically, one of the boys basically said that he had banged said that he had banged or had a little fun with the teacher. And that wasn't true. And the other one beat him up for it. He, like, defended the teacher's honor. And he will become a more important figure as the film goes on. Because we shortly learned that this is the student that she has an affair with. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. So before their friendship is sealed as this, you know, closeness, Sheba invites Barbara over for lunch. And that's when Barbara decides that she likes her and their friends and everything. But she also decides that she hates Sheba's family, basically. She narrates the whole scene of them at lunch, and it's like her, like, thoughts, basically. And she's just like, oh, she calls her Down syndrome child, the special needs child, she calls him the tiresome court jester. Which, like, this lady is so fucking cruel.
Yeah, the way she describes all the family.
Yeah, she calls Sheba's husband and, like, an old crone or something.
Yeah.
She goes, he's nearly old as me. I mean, admittedly, he is a considerable amount older than her. And you'll find out more about the nature of their relationship as the movie goes on. But yes, she's very judgmental about her family. She calls her daughter, like, a prissy princess or something, or a pocket princess.
Yeah, pocket princess.
What the fuck does that even mean?
I don't know.
She had these very judgmental terms and thoughts about the family. And then she calls their after-lunch routine, like, embarrassing or something. But, like, the whole family's just, like, freely dancing about together, and it's, like, a sweet moment. And she's just, like, really awkwardly watching them, and then she at some point, like, gets up and, like, shakes a fist or two to, like, try to dance, and it's...
Yeah, so she's just standing in the middle of it. It's weird.
Smoking a cigarette. It's so cringe.
Yeah.
Like, lady, loosen up. Jesus Christ. But then they have, like, a conversation away from the rest of the family, and she was, like, really open and honest with her and tells her, you know, lots of, like, intimate things and stuff from her life. And Barbara's like, I'm her confidant now. We're best friends. And it's like, whoa, slow your roll. You had one lunch. You know?
Yeah.
She's, like, already completely obsessed with this woman, and it's scary, honestly. So... they're, like, at a... it goes forward to a play or some kind of assembly thing at the school. And one of the other teachers tries to sit down next to her. And she's like, no, this seat's saved for Sheba.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And she wasn't even there.
Yeah, Sheba wasn't even there. So then she, like, after a few minutes, is like, where the fuck is she? So she gets up and goes to look for her. And this is when she witnesses Sheba in a sexual encounter with Stephen Connolly. Basically, she peeks through the art room window, and there she's, like, blowing the kid in the art room. And Judy Dench witnesses the whole thing. And basically the next day, she immediately calls her and is like, or maybe it's that night, I'm not sure. But she's like, I know about Stephen Connolly. We need to talk. And then Sheba's like, what are you talking about? And Sheba's like, don't play dumb. You know you've committed a serious crime, right? And then that, like, scares her. So she's like, okay, I'll come meet you. And then basically Sheba is blackmailed by Barbara to be her friend forever.
Yeah.
She holds it over her head that she knows this. She's like, look, I'm not going to tell on you. But you've got to break up with him, spend, like, tons of time with me, and get your life together. But as long as you do those things, I won't tell anyone. It's not going to benefit anyone, right? I'm not going to, no. We'll just keep it a secret. It'll just be our little secret.
That's so weird.
I know. As long as you break up with him and spend tons of time with me, more than comfortable... then we'll be fine. I won't tell anyone. That's basically the vibe. That's not how she says it, but it's that vibe. So, yay, friends. But Sheba is relieved that she's not going to tell her, so she's eager to do whatever to keep her quiet, essentially. She also makes it sound like it's because she actually cares about her, not that she's manipulating her. So Sheba doesn't really realize the danger she's in. She, like, thinks everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah, she has no idea.
Yeah, it's not. Honey, no, it's not going to be okay. So, let's see. Barbara, she goes to visit her sister over Christmas break. And the sister asks her about, she's like, I'm sorry about Jennifer. Because Jennifer was this friend that Barbara spent tons of time with in the past, apparently. And Barbara, like, very stiffly is like, well, she just moved away. It's no big deal. Like, and then Barbara's sister basically implies that she's a lesbian. And that, you know, it's okay, whoever you're seeing, if they're special or whatever, doesn't. Like, the sister's implying that she's fine with her sister being a lesbian, but Barbara is in deep denial about this, and I'm not a lesbian, but she doesn't say that, but that's basically what she's saying. I'm not a lesbian, we don't need to talk about this, that woman wasn't special, essentially. And she just cuts her off. It's like, cool, your sister's trying to, like, reach out and have a relationship with you, but you're a fucking bitter bitch who doesn't want help or real love, but whatever. Okay.
It's so weird how closed off she is and everybody else around her is, like, so open.
That is very weird. It's like she preys upon open people because she can manipulate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, Sheba, back with Sheba. Sheba tells Steven that, you know, like, we have to stop this affair. I can't continue seeing you. But he's basically, he just, like, kisses her and is basically like, you're not breaking up with me. And she can't quit him. To quote Brokeback Mountain. Yeah, she can't quit him. So, the affair continues. You see her, like, banging by the train tracks in this, like, really dirty, illicit part of the affair. And, you know, she's like, we can't tell anybody about this. You know that, right? Nobody can know about this. And he's like, I would never tell anyone, miss. He calls her miss, like, way too much. She says miss after, like, every word. Yes, miss. You're beautiful, miss.
And I miss.
In that, in that, like, thick Irish accent that he's got.
I love the way he talks.
It's pretty great, yeah.
It's super cute.
It is. It's super cute. So...
That's why it's, like, so hard to watch the sex scenes with him. I'm like, oh, God.
I know.
Because he's got that boy. I mean, really, the actor was, like, 16 when they filmed, right?
Yeah, he was 16.
And they really made out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
I feel dirty.
I do. Dirty all over.
I still don't understand how you watch it 3 times in your life.
The first time was 10, between the first time and second time was like 10 years.
Yeah.
And then it was like 6 years between the last time and now. So that's how, Morgan. There was a lot of time in between.
You forget how icky it is.
I did. I forgot how icky it is. It's still not half as icky as the real case, though.
No, definitely not. Not at all.
All right, so, back into it. So, Barbara is demanding more and more time of Sheba. Her cat gets sick, which we mentioned, and, you know, Sheba even buys her, like, a little present that's, like, an engraved, really nice picture frame that has the cat's name on it. She knows that's, like, the most important creature in this woman's life. And, you know, she's so thankful for it. And then, like, the poor cat dies, like, right after she gives her that, pretty much.
Oh, no.
Which is so sad. It sucks. But then, actually, a little bit before the cat dies, though, they're in Sheba's house, right? Like, hanging out. and Barbara sees Stephen going into her, like, greenhouse or art building, something. And he has his hood up, and you know, you can't see his face. So she just thinks that someone's, like, breaking in. So she's like, call the police. Call the police, Sheba. And she was like, no, they're just, it's just the neighbor boy. It's no big deal. Just, like, trying to, like, move past it quickly. And then the phone rang, her Nokia phone rang.
Yeah.
Because that's the time period. And they both lunge for it, and Judi Dench wins. She answers it. And it's Steven. And he doesn't even wait for whoever answers it to say hello. He's just like, where are you? I've been dreaming of your hot, wet, sweet cunt all morning or something like that. Something gross like that.
Yeah.
It's like, and your then...
hot, sweet cunt.
Yeah, something like that. And then you just see Judi Dench slowly move the phone away from her ear and hang up and put the phone down and look at Sheba like, bitch, you have crossed the wrong woman. So she storms out, and Sheba's, like, chasing after, like, please, please, I promise I'll end it. And, you know, she basically is like, we better do it right this second, or else I'm gonna literally wait for your husband to come home. And so, obviously, she freaks out and goes to, like, break it off. Yeah, it's fucked up. And when she confronts Stephen with all the, everything that's going on or whatever, he's just like, look, this was supposed to just be a bit of fun, but now it's this whole serious thing, and I'm not into it. I'm out. And he basically just dumps her like a sack of bricks, which Judi Dench told her he would do because he's a teenage boy. But yeah. she didn't listen to Judi Dench. And, yeah. So now Judi Dench has even more power over her. Bum, bum, bum. Okay. So. Then, not too terribly long after that, Barbara's just at home, like, after the cat, or actually, the cat dies. And then she goes over, immediately, straight away, she goes over to Sheba's and is like, you have to console me. A person has died. I'm sorry, your cat's not a person, as much as we like to pretend that they are. I love my cat as much as the next person, but it's not a person. But she is my mother died levels of upset, though. Judi Dench's character is Barbara. So, but Sheba and her family are literally on the way out the door to her son's first, like, performance. And it's a big deal for him because he's special needs. And, you know, like, everything in their life when they accomplish is really special and huge to them and their families, as it should be. And she's just like, this is my son and my family, and you can't, no, I can't be here for you. I'll call you later. I'm sorry. And Judi Dench is not having it. And Bill Nighy's character, the husband, I love what he does here. He gets out of the car and is like, what spell does this, is this a coven? What spell does this woman have over you?
Yeah, is this a, is she, what do you say? Is she a white witch?
Something like that. Why is she always around? He's, like, really just, like, over her. Really upset with her always being around. It's a point of contention. And he's
yeah,
just,
he's like, saying, like, what everyone in the audience is thinking. Like, what the fuck? Like, why is everyone okay with her doing, like, being here?
Yeah, exactly. So, she gets in the car with her family and...
I like what... Oh, sorry. He goes... Give me my fucking wife back!
Yeah, that's great, too. Give me my fucking wife back! And so she gets in the car, and they drive off, and Judi Dench is just steaming. Barbara's off the charts mad. She goes back home, and is just, like, stewing over the death of her... She buries her poor cat, and this rather unfortunate-looking teacher that has clearly shown interest in Sheba before... like, flirted with her. You see a scene where he, like, kind of flirts with her. He comes over, and he's like, I have something to talk about. I need to talk to you about Sheba Hart. And the look on Barbara's face at first is like, do you know about the affair? Because, like, you know, she's prepared to deny any knowledge of it, right? You know, at first. And then he's like, Oh, no. Actually, so the thing is here, I totally have a crush on her. Like, I really want to get up in that. And Barbara's like, bro, obviously, this is not how they're talking. This is just me talking, but...
yeah.
I'm paraphrasing.
Barbara does not say bro.
No, very much not. She speaks very properly. But, you know, she essentially says, dude, you know she's married, right? Are you asking me to ask her if she would like to commit some adultery with you?
Yeah.
And then he just looks at her kind of like bashfully, like, I mean, kind of. And that's when Sheba is just like, I'm not Sheba, but that is when Sheba gets completely thrown under the bus. But that's when Judi Dench says, oh, I hear that you're not quite her type. Oh, so she has a type. Oh, yes. She likes younger men. Shockingly younger, I'm told. Boys, even. You might even know one of them. Stephen Connolly? 10th year? That's the one. And she's like, I just hear stories around school. Just, you know, bathroom, teacher's lounge, gossip. No big deal. Plants the seed. Acts like she doesn't know if it's actually true or not. But plants it enough that the guy's like, I've probably seen the way he looks at her. And he takes it seriously enough that he informs the parents and the authority. And yeah, that's when the shit hits the fan.
Which it should have been done at the very beginning.
Yeah. The second Judi Dench saw this happening, the second Barbara saw this happening, she should have immediately called the police.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's not a good person.
She's a little off her rocker.
She's unhinged. Massively unhinged.
Got bats in the belfry.
Yeah. A little bit. So, she goes back into school. Before that happens, rather. Let's back it up a little bit. The mother of Steven comes over and basically pushes her way into into Sheba's house and slaps her and calls her a perverted...
She, like, beats the shit out of her.
Yeah, she beats her up, and she calls her a perverted something or other. A perverted slut? Something like that.
Yeah. A child fucker or something.
Yeah, it's, it's not pretty. Yeah. And Judi Dench's character, Barbara, just, like, pushes her up to the children up the stairs to, like, shield them from what's happening, kind of. And then... At school, we hear that, you know, Sheba's fired, and then shortly after that, Barbara is sent to the headmistress, headmaster's office. And he's like, I noticed that you were very close to Sheba. Did you know about this? And she's like, no, I didn't know. I had no idea. And then she's like, you can't prove anything. I don't know anything. And then he's like, oh, really? Well... How about this? I think it's almost retirement. I think it would be best for everyone if you just retired a little early. And she's like, no way. To which he pulls out the big guns. So I talked to a former teacher here that you were, you know, close with, like Sheba. Jennifer? I talked to Jennifer. And it turns out Jennifer had a restraining order on you. You weren't allowed to get within 500 feet of her. Sounds like a great friendship, right? You were stalking her.
Yeah.
And then he's like, so you're fired. Bye-bye. Get out. Don't let the doors hit you in the ass on the way out. And everyone's staring at her as she leaves. And on her way out, she goes to puke in like the boys' bathroom stall or something. Because she's, I don't know. I guess she's like, it's all starting to hit her. And I guess there's at least somewhat her actions, the consequences have gotten to her a little bit. She's clearly nervous and upset. And then it's back to her at her house, and she's writing in her diary, and she's like, I haven't heard from Sheba in days. Like, is she shunning me? What have I done? Does she know that I'm the one who told? And then Sheba comes to live with her because her husband basically kicked her out of the house. And she goes to get groceries, Barbara does, and Sheba's just looking through, she's, like, just kind of, like, sitting up in Barbara's room, and she, like, puts on some thick black eyeliner and some bright red lipstick, and it's just kind of like playing around and thinking.
Yeah, she's like, it's so weird because she looks, what is that? She looks like that picture of her from the 80s.
Yes.
She's like going back to her childhood, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. In a way. She's like putting on, she's like doing her punk scene makeup that she used to wear. And she's just like looking in the mirror, and then she leans down and picks up a crumbled piece of paper out of the wastebasket. And it's a page torn out of Barbara's diary. And it reveals enough to her that she goes tearing through Barbara's room, looking everywhere for the rest of the journal. She finally finds it and discovers all about Jennifer and knows that Barbara is who ratted her out. And she's livid and devastated. And Barbara comes home to her just sitting with the diary in her lap and, like, the mascara beautifully smeared on her face, by the way. And they have it out. They have a literal knockdown, drag-down fight. Like, Judi Dench is being pummeled by Cate Blanchett. It's a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah. She's like, slap, 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 slap.
Push into the fireplace. Boom.
Yeah.
Freak stuff. And then she runs out of the apartment into the paparazzi and reporters. And she just yells into the crowd, I'm right here. It's like this moment of just everything's driving her nuts right now. She's at the, you know, the height of I'm gonna fucking lose it. And then she snaps out of it, kind of, and realizes that she's being engulfed by the reporters and the crowd. So Judi Dench comes out and, like, grabs her and, you know, pulls her away from everyone and puts her back inside. And I guess they just kind of, like, not really talk it out, but, you know, she's just like, we could have been friends. I would have been your friend without you being so clingy. Like, I invited you to lunch because I liked you, but you've really screwed the pooch, Judi Dench. But, I mean, obviously, you know, she was not innocent in this either. And Judi Dench points that out. She's like, Sheba, you did fuck a little boy.
Yeah.
That is still your fault.
I didn't make you.
Yeah, I didn't make you do that. I just capitalized on it for my own personal gain. And then she goes back to her husband, Sheba does, and just kind of, you know, leaves Judi Dench aside. She gets sentenced to 10 months, which is honestly a slap on the wrist kind of sentence for what she did. and it's strongly implied that she gets back with her family. And then the last scene is Barbara seeing a new woman that she's interested in, and she like sits down next to her on a park bench and they strike up a conversation because the woman is reading a paper about Sheba and the whole affair, and she's like, oh, I knew her. She's like, yeah, we taught at the same school. But she really downplays her role. She's like, oh, I didn't know her that well, you know, she was kind of cold.
Yeah,
like... okay. This is 2006. The internet does exist.
You're going to be listed somewhere.
Yeah, the woman is that you're trying to make friends with is going to figure out that you're actually really connected to this at some point. So good luck with that, crazy lady. But, like, they exchange names, and she invites her out to some concert or something, and seemingly she's going to continue to prey on vulnerable, open women, and that's how the movie ends. That's Notes on a Scandal. Woo!
That's notes on
notes on a scandal.
Scandal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my notes on a scandal. So I've got fun facts as usual, obviously. So let's get into them. Filming took place in August and September of 2005. The film was mainly shot on location in Parliament Hill, Gospel Oak, and Camden Town areas of Northwest London. The Arts and Media School in Islington was used as a film location for many of the school scenes. This is my favorite fun fact that I'm about to tell you about this movie. In season 8, episode 19 of American Dad.
Oh my god.
Steve has an accidental phone call with Dame Judi Dench as he is about to enter Roger's attic gym. Like, he somehow accidentally calls Dame Judi Dench. And then after he hangs up the phone, it cuts to the scene from Notes on a Scandal where Barbara answers Sheba's cell phone, knowing it to be Stephen Connolly. So that scene where she hangs up on him, that's what she does to Steve. That's the way they have it cut. I love it so much. Okay, so Nicholas Holt audition. Do you know who Nicholas Holt is, by the way?
Name rings a bell. Not off the top of my head. I'm bad with names.
So he was, I think the character is Beast, the like blue fuzzy X-Man in the newer X-Men films. He plays Beast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In those movies, if that's the right name. I think it is. He's also in Skins. Did you ever watch Skins, Morgan?
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. He was...
He's in The Great.
Yes, he is. He co-stars on The Great.
Yeah, that's correct.
He is the little boy in About a Boy.
Oh.
He's been acting like his whole life, pretty much.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but he auditioned for the role of Stephen Connolly several times, went through and got through several different auditions. But Andrew Simpson was who was eventually cast. As someone who unapologetically loved Skins, I think Holt would have made a good Stephen Connolly. But I think ultimately a pure unknown with raw talent was the better way to go.
Yeah, I think he would have made a good one, too.
Yeah, I mean, he plays, a snotty playboy, fuckboy on Skins. So I think he would have been good at it. So Annabelle, the character at the very end of the film, who Judi Dench begins to prey upon, she is played by Anne-Marie Duff, who is known for playing Fiona on Shameless UK.
Oh. Yeah, that's where I knew her from. I love Shameless.
Yeah.
Shameless is good.
I like the American version better than the UK version. But I will note that after, say, season 4, U.S. Shameless goes downhill drastically.
Yeah. I think I'm just judging it by the later.
That's fair, because, the first few seasons are really solid.
Yeah, it has Jeremy Allen White from The Bear. I like him.
Yeah. This won't be breaking news when this comes out, but as we're recording, it's breaking news. The Queen of England just died.
Yeah, it popped up when I was looking at one of my things. It just popped up in the side of the screen.
Yeah, me too.
Because I have news articles pulled up.
Yeah. So yeah, we're talking about a largely British cast and the Queen of the UK just died. So.
I didn't think she would ever die.
Honestly, I was telling when it was noted that she was like in critical care or whatever this morning, I told Mark, I bet Charles thought this was never going to happen. He's like, I'm never going to be king.
I'm never going to be king. Sorry, our friends across the pond. Yes. I don't know if you...
If you're into the royals, or maybe you absolutely detest them.
Yeah, sorry, either way. My condolences.
Either way, yeah. All right, so, and as you said earlier, Andrew Simpson was 16 years old at the time of filming, and he did not hesitate to do the sex scene with Cate Blanchett. And,
oh, I bet he was so happy.
Yeah, you're a 16-year-old straight male actor playing a role that calls for you to make out with Cate Blanchett. Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to refuse. Sorry, you're just not.
Yeah, seriously. Like, even if it was, like, an older man, I don't think they would refuse. Hell, I wouldn't refuse.
I would make out with Cate Blanchett in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Juno Temple's first major role and her first audition for a film was this movie. When she first told her parents that she wanted to be an actor, they tried to talk her out of it. They're like, well, you're going to be judged because your father's a director, and it's going to be harder for you to actually get a role. They're going to judge you more strictly. And there's, you know, you can't just step into this and be good, is basically what her mom said to her. But then her mom sent her to this open audition for this film, and she nailed it. And then she got hired again the next year for Atonement, which is a great movie, by the way. And then the mom's like, fucking hell. Well, surely it goes downhill after this. But it didn't. She's worked continuously since her first film. I think my favorite movie that she's in is the adaptation of Joe Hill's Horns, where she plays the boyfriend, the girlfriend of Daniel. What? Yeah, she plays the girlfriend of Daniel Radcliffe's character in that movie.
I haven't seen that.
It's cute. It's a lot of things. It's a good movie. I like it. It's a horror movie. Just to note it. It's a horror movie. So Jack O'Connell, who is another Skins alum, he also auditioned for the role of Stephen Connolly. And I think he would have been great because he has this very raw energy to his performances that I really love. But again, he was beat out by Andrew Simpson.
I feel like if anyone knew that Cate Blanchett would be their, you know, girlfriend in the movie, I think everyone would have auditioned.
So many teenage boys were like, I gotta get this role.
Yeah, I have to get this role.
I hope I get it.
Yeah, make out with Cate Blanchett.
Yeah. Okay, so when Barbara goes to throw up after the meeting with the headmaster, she goes to throw up in the, you know, like the school bathroom, and if you look closely in the background on the wall in graffiti, it says Babs Covet, which that's just her name shortened, equals nasty old Leza. I want to lick her mangy twat.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So go back to the film. Pause that.
Mangy twat.
Yeah. That is, all right. That's a lot to unpack. You insulted her and called her a lesbian, but you also want to lick her twat that you think is mangy.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Okay, all right. You know, I'll say it again. The Brits just do cursing differently.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the fighting scene between Cate Blanchett and Judi Dench, they went out and bought a bottle of champagne to celebrate the end of that scene because they were both terrified and worried about having to fight each other. They drank nearly the whole bottle.
That's pretty cool.
I would have just finished it.
God, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
To watch that.
Right? All right, so we're going to take a quick break. And then we'll be back to talk about the very real case of Mary Kay Letourneau and Vili Folau.
AKA child rape.
Yes.
Spoilers.
Come back for an hour of talking about child rape.
Yeah. Please come back.
Please come back. Sorry. Didn't mean to make it sound like that. Look. At least it wasn't like she held him down and forcibly, brutally raped him. It's not better. it's not.
It's not better. No.
But it is not that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get into it after the break. Welcome back. Morgan.
Ma'am?
What? Morgan, tell us about Mary Kay Letourneau.
Okay. This is a doozy. I hope, okay, we definitely need to put a trigger warning, like, right here. And we need to probably put a trigger warning in the beginning of the show. But Mary Kay Letourneau, or Mary Catherine Letourneau, was a teacher and a child rapist. She was a sex offender. She recently died, July 6, 2020. She died of stage 4 cancer. She was brought into the spotlight in the 90s when she had a sexual relationship with a student. Vili Folau, who was 12 years old when their relationship started. Yep. She had him as a student when he was in second grade, too. Yeah, which is just disgusting.
Like, yeah, the first time she ever met him, he was 8 years old.
Yeah, and she was, like, bragging about him looking up her skirt. Like, she was fucking sick. Like, all of the interviews with her and with both of them, like, she looks like a psycho. Mm-hmm. And the way she talks. And she claims she didn't even know that sex with a 12-year-old was illegal. Yeah, okay.
Look, I know that you had a kind of weird, charmed, sheltered, conservative upbringing, Mary Kay, but bullshit.
Yeah. No, it's definitely fucking bullshit, because she went to Arizona State University. I think when you're in teaching, you learn how to be a mandated reporter, and you learn what sexual assault is, and the age of consent, and all that. Like, she's just playing stupid.
Exactly. She wasn't just some layman. She's a teacher.
Yeah.
You are trained in all that stuff. Because your livelihood deals with children.
Exactly. And it's, she disgusts me so bad.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if she got out of a lot of things because of her father. Because he was like a counselor.
Senator.
Yeah, he was a senator, and then he provided counsel to George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
And then her brother was the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Defense. So, like, she comes from an upper class family. Like, exactly. You should know that, like, she's an educated woman and grew up with educated family, not in the spotlight, I wouldn't say, just because they're, like, a senator. I don't think she was, like, put in the forefront of it, but.
Well, as her best friend growing up said in an interview in the latest documentary on her, I forget what the name of it was, but her best friend growing up said that nobody could tell her what nobody, you know, Mary Kay did whatever she was. So I think that speaks to what she ended up doing and the way she handled the trial and everything.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think it just makes me so mad of how it was presented, because I remember this case when I was a kid.
Oh, me too. I followed this case because it was like a train wreck. I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember my parents being so disgusted by it. But like, the news was making it seem like this love story where two people are being torn apart by the justice system. And like, that's how I remember it being, like, oh, it's like a fairy tale kind of thing. So, like, which is so fucked up.
So my memory of the case and the way the news media handled it was that when she was first arrested and everything, it was looked down upon. And people looked at her with disgust. But after she got out of jail and everything that happens after that, that's when they made it seem like this fairy tale love story and the narrative changed.
Yeah. I think there was the narrative there that they were, I mean, there's so many articles with the word star-crossed lovers that I'm like, that's disgusting.
Which is fucking disgusting.
He was 12.
Yeah, like, anyone who calls it that in the media should be ashamed.
Yeah, and he was 12. She was 34 whenever they started having a sexual relationship.
Like, I am months away from turning 34.
Yeah, and can you imagine, like,
just... No, it makes me want to hurl to even think of that.
Yeah, and, like, even Follow? Oh, damn it. Follow?
Philly Falau,
sorry. even Falau now says, yeah, it's kind of messed up what happened. She was a big part of my life, but I'm her age. Like, he was her age, like, back in 2020, I think. And in the article, it says, like, if I started having thoughts about a 12 or a 13-year-old, I would go seek help, because that's not normal.
Yeah, he's changed his opinion on this. But
yeah, since she's died.
Yeah, but he still has never really talked particularly bad about her, which is odd.
He, in some of the, I don't know if it's like the media, you know, putting different cuts, because they do that, but the way he looks at her in some of the interviews, he's like, what the fuck? Like, like, he doesn't say anything, but his face says it all. Like, because she's like, who's the, there was one, they said, who wears the pants in the relationship, or who's the boss? And she's like, who's the boss? Who's the boss? And he's looking at her like, you fucking psycho.
Yeah, she definitely, you can tell that she definitely has fear that he will leave her for a younger woman. And, you know, someone age appropriate. So she, like, you see her dress younger looking than she should and act younger looking than she should in interviews with them together, like, after the fact. And it's really disgusting.
Yeah, because she groomed him from a very early age. She took away his childhood. Like, she fucking raped him when he was 12, and like you said, she didn't hold him down. But this is just like Jeffrey Epstein, if the roles were reversed. Like, imagine,
oh yeah, absolutely,
someone calling it star-crossed lovers if it was a 34-year-old man and a 12-year-old girl. Like, yeah, it would be completely different. And she started grooming him before he even hit puberty, and yeah, like, he had just hit puberty when they had sex.
Yeah.
It's just so disgusting.
So,
and it was multiple times over months, and she was married and had 4 kids with another man, mm-hmm, and then just grooms this child and convinces him that he says they're in love, she says they're in love, but I don't think that's love. I think that's grooming and manipulation. And you can see it in a lot of the interviews that she's very manipulative.
He may not be tied up in a basement, but it's Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason, okay, so he became a father at the age of 13. She went to jail. She did send him secret love letters from jail the entire 7 years she was in.
So can I get this in a, like, succinct narrative, like, timeline really fast for the audience?
Yeah.
Okay. So, basically, her husband found out about the affair, and instead of immediately reporting it to the cops, he just tried to win his wife back. And he actually confronted Villy Falau like he was a 30-year-old man, basically, like, why are you fucking my wife? What the hell? And then...
Everything they do is inappropriate.
yes, absolutely. So then he tells another family member about it, and they're who actually reported it to the authorities. She gets arrested, and it's while she's in custody that they discover that she is pregnant with her first child.
By Villy. Fifth child total.
Fifth child overall. First child with Villy. And then she's allowed out to go give birth. And she's only sentenced to, like,
6 months or 7 months.
Something like that. But then also, basically, all she has to do is go to therapy. And then, about 3 months into her being free again, by the way, the kid goes to Villy's mom. She's not given custody of the child after it's born. But when she's given the chance to be free again, about 3 months into that, even though there's a no contact order, she gets back in touch with Villy, and they're caught fucking in the car. And then she's sent back to jail to serve out a full term of about 7 years. And they're supposed to take a drug test, because that's just standard, and she refuses to do that. the urine analysis because she knew that she was pregnant again.
Yeah. Again.
So
like immediately after.
Yeah, so she's incarcerated both times she's pregnant with his children.
What a wonderful way to bring a child into the world.
Absolutely. And both
by
children.
By rape. Grooming.
Yep. So both children go to live with Villies, and then she goes to jail for 7 years. And then, Morgan, tell them what happens next.
So she goes to jail for 7 years. During this time, Villy is still in school. He's trying to be a dad to these children, you know, like 15, 16-year-old. Going to school and trying to be a father when he's a kid himself. So she's secretly writing love letters. I don't know if he ever got any to her.
I don't know how he would get any back to her, but because the way that she was sending them was through the nipple of the breast milk that she was allowed to pump out.
Yeah. It's just maddening. Because I think I'm not going to speculate about anybody's actions or anything, but like they somehow like communicated when she was going to get out, and they met up within hours after she got out after the 7 years. Even though there was a do not contact order, he immediately went to the courts to have that removed because at this point he's 21. And they get together, they get that removed, and then they are to be married.
He went to court
and petitioned the removal of the do not contact order because he's an adult now.
Let me just
and they granted it.
Yeah, let me just rewind for just a split second. So the way they found out about the secret messages through the nipple, somebody actually checked far enough to actually find it. But when she got caught, she was given 6 months in solitary, by the way.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like in the documentary, they're interviewing some of her former like prison mates.
Oh, I wish I knew about this documentary that existed. Sorry. Yeah. That would've been good.
Yeah, so the prison mate were like, we've never seen anyone get that much time in solitary. So she really, really, she just over and over again shoots herself in the foot. And she doesn't care.
Yeah, she doesn't care. She pretty much puts it all on Billy, too. And it's like, he's the one that wanted it. I'm like, he's the one who seduced me. Yeah.
She makes herself out to be a victim. And it's like, you're disgusting.
She does. And I hate all the interviews with her.
Absolutely.
Like, he's just a shell of himself. Like, that's his whole life.
Yeah.
She was there.
She is his whole life, pretty much.
Yeah, and now she's dead, and I guess he's learning to live, finally.
Yeah, he's learning to take his life back, and I mean, their children are old now. Their daughters are 25 and, like, 23, I think, or 24.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that they were... So he was 21 when she got out of jail, and his daughters were 7 and 8.
Yeah.
When he was 21.
Yeah, yeah.
But
there's no way for any child to live.
No, and I mean, he's kind of spoken up, but not really like negative about her, because I mean, he grew up without a dad, and he made it a point that he was going to be there for these girls.
Yeah.
Even at that young age, he said, I'm going to be there for them because my dad wasn't. But like, he stayed together for the kids.
Yeah, because there was a time period in 2019, he filed for legal separation, and they were going divorce, but they got back together.
It was 2017 when they separated, and then they filed for divorce like 2019, but they were together, and then she got sick, and he stayed with her, and he was there when she died.
Yeah.
But they initially separated when the kids all moved out, when they all graduated. And I mean, it just goes to show that I think a lot of it was for the girls.
For the kids, yeah.
Yeah, but like their interviews with Barbara Walters. Oh.
I know.
I just felt so bad for him. Like, he had no childhood. He didn't have a teenage years.
No, he had to be a father immediately.
Yeah, he was a dad.
Yeah, 13. Oh, I'm a father. No need to worry about how I look in front of a girl or anything. I'm already a dad.
Yeah, and he said he did date, like, while she was in jail for the 7 years. And her face...
When he said that?
Yeah, she was like, yeah, he dated. Like, you can see, like, her visibly upset. Like, instantly upset. Like, and
I was supposed to be the only woman you ever had any kind of romantic feelings for.
Yeah. And then the interviewer, she, like, hated the interviewer. I can't remember what news channel it was. It's, like, Australian news or something. This guy's, like, fucking grilling her, and it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he only really speaks out whenever she's not next to him. Like, well, yeah. She owns the conversation the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't get a say in it. She's boss.
Yeah, she is boss. And I think that's the interview where she says that. Who's boss? Who's boss?
Dude, another thing. In the interview that I watched, or the documentary I watched, it was the prison woman. Her former inmate friends, after they were out, they, like, came to visit her and Billy and the kid, and yeah, they went to go visit her and the kid, and they said it was just the weirdest home environment. Like, you walked in and she's, like, doing all the cooking and cleaning and being, like, a dutiful housewife type thing, and he's just, like, up in his room playing Xbox or, like, listening to music with his friend.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah, you know,
because he's a child.
Yeah, because he's just, like, one of the kids. That's the way they put it.
God. Yeah, it just makes me so sad for him. Like, his whole life is, and she just makes it out that she's the victim in all this, and it's like, no, Billy is.
Yeah.
Billy got groomed, manipulated,
yeah,
his childhood stolen from him, his virginity stolen from him, like, he was a dad, like, unwillingly.
Yeah, like, this poor guy. Finally has a chance to, like, you know, now that she's gone, he finally has a chance to pick up and, like, build his own life.
Yeah.
And I really hope he's able to.
I hope he's able to. I really do.
Yeah. So, it's been a while since we just had, like, a fun refresher catch-up after a case, as our cases have gone on pretty long. So, Morgan, what have you been up to? Have you watched any good lately?
Yeah. I mean, I just started the new Game of Thrones show.
Oh, yeah. I've been totes watching House of the Dragon, or as George R.R. Martin calls it, Hot D.
Yeah, House of the Dragon's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying Matt Smith as Daemon. I love Matt Smith. I'm not a simp for Matt Smith. I love Dr. Hume.
Yeah. It's just so weird seeing him in that role, like, whenever he's, like, pounding that woman from behind.
The sex worker.
Yeah, I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, it's really gross seeing him like that, because when I see Matt Smith, I'm like, I never want to see him sexual at all. The only woman that he's allowed, in my mind, fictionally, that he is allowed to be romantic, River Song.
Yeah, just River Song, no one else.
No one else, only River
Song. They need to bring River Song into the show.
I would love to see Alex Kingston in anything. I love her.
I do too. Her hair is
amazing. I love her hair. That's my favorite part, is when the episode Let's Kill Hitler, where she regenerates into Alex Kingston from her, like, teenage body that she was in. she looks in the mirror and she, like, grabs her own tits and lifts them up a little, and then she looks at the hair and she goes, oh in the hair.
I just watched that episode not too long ago.
That's a great episode.
I love
the line that she says, where she thinks, oh, I think the Third Reich's a bit rubbish. Why don't we go kill Hitler? I was on my way to a gay gypsy bar mitzvah or something. She says something like that.
A gay gypsy bar mitzvah.
Yeah, because it's just all the things that Hitler hated. And then I thought, oh, the Third Reich's a bit rubbish. Why don't I go kill Hitler? So, yeah, I've been watching Hot D, too.
I haven't started Rings of Power, have you?
Yes, I did tell you that I've started Rings of Power.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've watched the first two episodes. It is better than I thought it
would. I am pretty excited. I've just been so tired. I'm like, because I don't know. I'm like, I can't pay attention. I'm just so exhausted right now. So
I get that. I have, like, a backload of TV shows that I need to watch and finish. So, like, three different shows that I watch have their series, their final season, basically. And I've just been putting off finishing the shows. Like, I haven't haven't seen the final season of Killing Eve. I need to do that. I haven't watched the final season of Search Party on HBO, and I need to do that.
I have a massive list from you.
I know. Look, I review television and movies. You know, I watch a lot of them for work. So yeah, I recommend things a lot. Shocker, right? I started Shudder's 101 Scariest Movie Moments.
Oh, nice.
On Shudder, that just the first episode dropped yesterday. And as I've mentioned many times on the podcast before, Bravo had a special just like this called Bravo's 101 Scariest Movie Moments. And I have watched that countdown no fewer than 10. I watch it a lot around Halloween. Not every year, but I've watched it a lot of Halloween since it originally aired. And when I found out that this was coming out, I nearly shit a brick. I was so fucking excited. So yeah, I watched it last night, and then I was messaging Heather on Instagram, our friend from Wednesday Wine and Horror, and she's like, "Oh, I didn't know about this." And then she watched the first episode and was like, "None of those were scary. Those scared me."
None.
I'm like, "Yeah, but we watch horror movies all the time. Does anything scare us anymore?" I don't really think it does. I can't tell you the last time I was actually scared watching a movie. Probably when I was a kid, honestly. That's the last time I remember being scared in a film. See, because I think jump scares don't count, because I'm easily startled. Like, my phone rang yesterday, and I jumped like 10 feet in the air. Because I normally keep my phone on silent. So I had my phone on, because I've had a family emergency that I'm still dealing with. So I had my phone on in case any news happened, and yeah, it scared the shit out of me. It was just Rammstein's Du Hast.
Every time.
I'm so easily startled at a point of hilarity for my family. But my mom and sister are the same way, so I get it. I come by it honestly.
Andrew and I were watching the Miracle Workers.
Oh yeah, you were telling me about that, and I didn't even know it existed.
So goofy. It's silly. I like it. It's like every season is a different, like a completely different show. It's like an anthology.
Oh, I love anthology shows.
So it's pretty great. It's the same actors every time.
Yeah.
And Daniel Radcliffe and Steve Buscemi's in it. It's fucking great.
Okay. I love Steve Buscemi, and not to knock Harry Potter in any way, but I really enjoy Daniel Radcliffe's adult film roles, like after
Me too.
Harry Potter, because he's picked really interesting films. It's a lot like his celebrity doppelganger, Elijah Wood.
Yeah, he just does what he wants now.
Well, yeah, they were both in huge blockbuster film series, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, and they took that money from those blockbuster films that made millions, and they just do whatever they want now, and I love that, because they both choose weird and interesting roles. And
yeah, I love it. And then he's gonna play Weird Al Yankovic.
I know, Mark and I are excited for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And he looks like him. It's so weird.
I know, I love it. I'm excited about it.
But I will say, Daniel Radcliffe is fucking ripped. Oh my god, he's ripped.
I know, he is, and
he's like almost naked a lot in the show, and it's hilarious.
Okay. See, I prefer more of, like, our man Elijah Wood's body type, just thin and soft. Thin and soft is my type.
I mean, I like greatly huge, giant, muscular men. I mean, just take a look at Andrew.
No diss to Andrew.
No.
Not a bodybuilder.
No, he's not. But he is getting ripped now. He's turning into a little white Terry Crews.
Is he gonna do Old Spice commercials?
I hope so. No, I love Terry Crews.
I mean, you should just get Andrew to do an Old Spice commercial just for you.
He did do something hilarious on Valentine's Day 1 year, because I was all depressed because I had to work and was in nursing school, stressed out, and he didn't get me a flower or tell me happy. I don't know. I was just being emotional as fuck, and I was like, does he even like me? And he ended up going to buy all these rose petals, and he put on like one of those snap shirts, like, you know, a nice polo that has snap buttons.
Yeah.
And he was like, I wanted to say that I love you. And I was like, oh. And he was like, but step back. And I was like, what? He goes, step over there. And he said, I have something else to say. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this, please don't ask me to marry him. Because it was like only our first year. I was like, no, no marriage proposal. And he just ripped open his shirt and the flower petals went everywhere. And he wrote on his stomach with a marker and said, oh my God, you're the love of my life or something stupid. Oh, it was so great. It was so funny. I laughed so hard I fell over and I peed on myself. I just like couldn't even stand anymore. I was like, oh,
I bet you were scary. Really worried for a split second when there was something written on him, like, please don't say marry me.
Yeah, will you marry me?
I'm really glad that so it was funny. it was just a declaration of love.
Yeah, because I was wondering why his stomach looked so funny. Because he was hiding, like, 4 pounds of rose petals in his fucking shirt.
He looked like he was, like, in a prosthetic.
Yeah. I thought he had, like, a fake belly on. I was like, what is in there? He was like, no, no, don't touch. No, no. I'm like, what the fuck is in there?
That's amazing, Morgan.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking great.
I love you guys' relationship. Don't crack me up. Oh, so let's see.
Morgan, are we gonna tell anybody about what's coming up?
Yeah, I was about to say. We're going to. I think we told them last time that we
did
were.
We?
Well, yeah, because we were supposed to be doing the BTK versus the Clove Hitch Killer this time. But Morgan is deep in research on that and needs more time.
Yes.
So we did Mary Kay Turner today. So that's what's happening. Our next case, and our friend Trent from Bloody Buddies will be back to talk about that.
I'm excited.
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
I'm excited to have Trent on again.
Yeah, me too. So Trent's back from Korea.
Oh, he is? Nice.
Yeah, so he's ready to, like, get back into podcasting shit, so we'll have Trent back on. We're gonna talk BTK and what a shit he is.
Yeah. God, he's such a piece of shit.
Yep. And I've not watched The Clove Hitch Killer, so I'm ready to see Dylan McDermott play a shit.
Yeah, no, it's really crazy that they picked him.
Well, I've seen him play at the shit before, so I'm not that shocked.
Yeah, like in the American Horror Story, the house.
American Horror Story, the Murder House, the first.
Yeah, show. The Murder House.
Mm-hmm. He was a piece of shit in that show.
Yeah.
He was also a piece of shit in Party Monster.
You think Party Monster?
He's the club promoter with the iPad.
Oh my God.
Did you not know that was him?
Well, I haven't seen it in that long, but.
That's fair. I haven't either, though, actually.
Yeah, I think I last saw it when I was like 19 or 20 or something.
But yeah, that's absolutely Dylan McDermott.
Oh my God. That movie's really old, too.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, he was on The Practice in the 90s. On ABC. My parents watched that about lawyers.
Yeah. I didn't watch that show, but I didn't know he was.
I didn't either. I was like 9. My parents.
Yeah. Wow, he looks exactly the same. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture of him with the eye patch. Wasn't he in the Cut? No, Nip Tuck. Was he in Nip Tuck?
I don't think. If he was, it was just like a guest spot. Because he definitely wasn't one of the stars.
No, that's, I can't remember his name, but definitely. Different guy.
Okay. One of the dudes on Nip Tuck is named Dylan Walsh, and he's like blue-eyed, shorter one who's married. But the other one, whose name is escaping me right now, was also on Charmed. He played a demon that Phoebe married. And again, that's because my mom loved that show. Not because I loved that show. My mom just always had that show on, so whether I like it or not, I know stuff about Charmed. Ah, yes. All right, so we will see you guys next time, and I don't know, stay creepy or something.
Bye.
income are on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.